Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. From time to time on this program, we speak with Andrew Gooley, managing editor of The Strand magazine. Although The Strand publishes mainly new detective fiction, Gooley has built a reputation for making the magazine a Noah's Ark of sorts for the titans of American literature. He has a knack for discovering unpublished works by authors like Fitzgerald, Faulkner, Heller, and others. Now, a short story by James Thurber is seeing the light of day in the latest issue. And it's my pleasure to welcome Andrew Gooley back to the roundtable.
Always good to be with you, Ian.
So tell us about this James Thurber short story and where you found it.
I found this story at the Rare Book and Manuscripts Library in Ohio State University. It's a very, very funny story. Been put there in many respects. It's a spoof of the Wild West stories that were published in pulp magazines at the time when Thurber was a teenager. And it has a lot of the ingredients of a zany Thurber piece. We have this oddball sheriff, a couple of bullies who are out to just shoot up the town and, you know, terrorize everybody there. One of them is named Bud Tevis. And the other bully is named Flowers McCall. I love those names. And we have a rather belligerent bartender, too.
And for people who haven't read it yet, what's it called?
It's called How Law and Order Came to Aramie. So it's set either in, I believe it's set in Arizona. I was thinking it would be Wyoming, but there is a reference to Arizona, but I have not been able to find the town of Aramie in Arizona. So it could be another sly trick from James Thurber.
Do we know when he wrote this and what year it dates to?
He wrote this when he was 18 years old. In fact, when he was 18 and even before, he was a big, big, big fan of a lot of those pulp westerns. You know, he would save all the money that he had when he was a kid to go to the cinema. And he once wrote a letter saying that he saw William E. Cody playing in 1915 at the Dreamland Theater in Columbus. He shook hands with J. Warren Carrigan, the hero of the covered wagon. And he also wrote about when he was a child that he was reading The Virginian, and he ended up getting sick to his stomach reading the scene where there is a duel on a lonely street at sundown. So when you read this story, you can see how a lot of these things that he took very, very seriously ended up germinating into something which Thurber placed his odd spin on, which was just to completely spoof and, you know, just throw every single Western cliche that existed into this short story that's about 3,000 words.
Yeah, which he definitely does. How did you get wind of the existence of this story in the Ohio State libraries?
Now, this is an odd thing in that I did a lot of research. I went through several hundreds of pages of Thurber's works that were unpublished that I could not trace via bibliography of Thurber. And some of them were funny. Some of them you could describe as dated, since they spoke about, you know, some political races that were around in the 40s and 50s and 20s and 30s. But I looked at this one, and this one was completely unfamiliar to me. I consulted a lot of bibliographies, and I could not find this. So I contacted the biographer of Thurber, Harrison Kinney. And this guy's a remarkable man in that he worked as a writer for The New Yorker when Thurber was there. So this guy was working there from the 40s through the 50s. And he was a good friend of James Thurber. And he confirmed that he knew that this story had existed and that it was never published before. So probably a lot of my work would have been easier had I just gone directly to the biographer and asked him to find an unpublished work by Thurber.
Well, a lot of the authors whose works you've been uncovering, especially written when they were young in many cases, you know, these are great American authors who have had their collected works released. So do we know why Thurber never had this published earlier?
That's a very good question, Ian, and it's tough to it's a good question in that I thought it was a very polished work. There's when I was reading it, I was laughing. It was just something that looked very, very finished. But I think a lot of authors have a feeling that if they have not perfected their work, that they are not going to have it become a part of their published canon. A lot of times, authors will work on a short story, work on an article, and then they just won't get back to it because they'll hope to publish it at another time, and then they'll lose focus. So, you know, I've looked at many, many, many manuscripts of some very, very good authors, and at times I've looked at them and I've said to myself, okay, I know why this wasn't published. You know, this is an interesting curiosity, but I don't think that this is going to help the reputation or the legacy of this author. But whenever we found something where we said, hey, no, this is really, really good. This deserves to see the light of day. And this is one of those stories.
Do you ever get any pushback from, you know, in this case, Thurber scholars, or in the past, you know, Heller scholars for publishing something that the author apparently didn't want out there?
You know, you always will get one or two people who's, you know, just a wise person saying, oh, you know, I've worked at this author, and I know what this author drank for coffee every morning, and I know this author's third favorite color, and I'm sure this person would not have wanted this to become published. You know, you get these people who will always, you know, whine about one thing or another. With Thurber, we've had a very, very positive experience. His literary estate were the most wonderful people to work with. His daughter, Rosemary, gave us her blessing to have this published. So we've had a very, very good experience. But sometimes with some other works that we have published, we've gotten people who've gone, you know, who've just been so, so obsessive about pointing out any little thing that had disturbed them about publishing the work. For example, there was an Associated Press headline about an author who we published, and it was lost work by such and such author. And we had these scholars who were saying, how could they say it's lost? We've known this has existed all along. And at that point, you just say to yourself, I mean, excuse me, this has been lost to the reading public. It doesn't mean it's okay if 10 or 15 scholars knew it existed, but as far as the reading public is concerned, this was something that they've not known about.
You know, we've talked a few times over the last couple of years about these latest unpublished works coming to light in your magazine, but I don't think we've ever talked about you at all and what you do at The Strand. So what's your background, and how did you end up managing The Strand magazine?
Well, I would describe my interest as somebody who was just a collector of The Strand magazine, someone who, you know, had a very early passion for detective stories and mystery stories from when I was a kid. I was the little thin kid who was sitting in the swimming pool reading a history book or a book anthology of short stories that probably weighed as much as I did at that time. And, you know, since bringing back The Strand, I've enjoyed editing these great authors like Michael Connelly, Jeffrey Deaver, R.L. Stine. So it's been a dream come true for me. But a very, very big passion of mine ever since I was a kid was to look at manuscripts that were never published before, or just, you know, badger my mom saying, you know, why isn't Leo Tolstoy or F. Scott Fitzgerald alive so that I could ask them how they wrote their book? So short of that, which I know will not be happening, at least in this lifetime, I have the great pleasure of looking at these manuscripts by these authors and then just opening a box of magazines from the printer and seeing a new F. Scott Fitzgerald story or a new John Steinbeck story. And that thrill will never, ever, ever, ever go away.
Now, for people who maybe haven't seen The Strand recently or in quite a while, you know, it's a very thick, glossy magazine, right? Color. So I just wonder, is it tough being in the magazine business in 2016 that way?
Well, you need to adapt. We've been very, very lucky in that a lot of our readers have been loyal throughout the years. And, you know, we've sort of changed with the times because a lot of times magazines can be very, very stiff and very parochial in how they present themselves. But what we've always done, and I think one of the keys to our success, is we've always shaken things up. We've always had different contributors to the magazine. We'll pen a detective story. We'll pen something that's funny. We'll interview an actor. We'll interview a writer. We'll always keep things interesting, keep things different. And that's been a very, very key ingredient to our success. Another thing is that we've made sure to amp up our website. We have a blog that has a contribution every day by a famous best-selling author, and that also has been very, very helpful. So work, it's a much, much harder job than it was, let's say, 10 years ago, but we're constantly growing. We're very excited about that.
Okay, Andrew, I always ask for a cliffhanger at the end of these interviews. What's going to be the unpublished work that comes out in the next strand or sometime later this year?
Okay, we have something where a very, very famous writer writes a travel essay, and he speaks about a trip to Rome and meeting Grace Kelly. And then we have a writer known for science fiction works we found a manuscript by this author, and the story is a ghost story about this man who cannot sleep at night because he sees a shadow of a dead body on the ceiling above him. And that will be released this fall. So we have something in the summer issue and something this fall.
Okay, I'm writing down my guesses right now, and I will let you know if I was anywhere close. Andrew Gooley is managing editor of The Strand magazine. In the latest issue, a formerly unpublished short story by James Thurber appears. And Andrew, it's just always a pleasure to have you on the show, and thanks for keeping us up to date.
My pleasure, Ian. Always great to be on your wonderful show.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.